This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
Good evening. It is Friday night, our Friday fan show special on Love Sport. I am Matt Beadle and I'm joined. I tell you what a show this is going to be tonight. It's all kicking off in here. It's the boys from Nolu talking. Jeff Burnage, Stan Godwin and Ted Robinson. Because, of course, this is the Millwall fan show. And what a week it has been, gentlemen. A new man at the helm of Millwall Football Club. Was it, before we get onto anything else, the man you expected? Ted?
I think he was actually the best out of the candidates that I see in the end that was sort of being lined up for it, what we was being told. I'm pleased that Adam Barrett's staying. He's still staying as first team coach, and they was looking for someone to come in, keeping a backroom staff as it was. I said that the other week, so I'm happy about that. He fits the bill for me. He's a youngish manager who I think probably feels he's got a little something to prove, because it didn't go brilliant for him, funny enough, at Stoke, who we just happened to be playing.
Isn't it funny how the football world works out?
Swings around, yeah. But he was doing pretty well at other clubs. Like, he was doing very well at Birmingham. They just decided to get rid of him and bring in Gianfranco Zola. I mean, everybody was up in arms at Birmingham at the time. I remember that quite clearly, but it was new owners that decided that. So he's got a pretty decent CV. I like the way he's been talking this week. He seems to understand it. I know for a fact that he's been speaking to Neil Harris, because he made that quite clear on a TV show that he'd been talking to Neil. So, I think he fits the bill, and let's hope he does what I think he can do.
Well, let's hope so. And you alluded to his record, which, to be fair, is pretty good. I think sometimes you're judged by your most recent record, which, of course, as you said, Ted, was at Stoke City. And Stan, listen, he wasn't given enough time at Stoke. 8 months, I think it was, before they kicked him out, but did incredibly well at Burton. He turned Birmingham's fortunes around. Derby, a pretty decent record. So you've got a manager who comes from good stock.
No, that's right. I mean, because to me, when this first happened, the only sort of three, in my opinion, the only sort of three realistic names that was being bandied around, one was Chris Hughton, right? The other one was Aitor Karanka. Right, and then the other one was, you know, who we got now. So I've got no, you know, when I found out that he looked like he was going to get the job, well then, you know, lovely jubbly for me. I mean, I was well happy with that. And, you know, and I think in his time at Stoke, I think he only looked, out of 18 games, I think he lost three. And apparently, so I understand, they were complaining that, well, it was the style. I don't personally believe that. I think the problem is that they got relegated and they thought they were going to go straight back up. And it's never that easy, is it? It's never that easy.
No, yeah, you're right. He won more games than he lost.
Yeah, sure.
But because of the situation where Stoke were in terms of coming down from the Premier League, they thought that, yeah, he should have taken them straight back up. Jeff?
I'm pleased.
Yeah?
I'm pleased, yes. I'm very disappointed, as you all know, to see Neil go. Mm-hmm. It was important we got somebody that was at least as good, if not better, than Neil as a manager. And there were one or two candidates that did frighten me. Last time I was on, we were doing rhyme and slang. Do you remember?
I do remember
it well.
I'm
very glad we didn't get Aitor Karanka. I think everyone's behind Gary Rowett. Mind you, a lot of fans were behind Holloway when he was appointed, weren't they? So,
that's right. Yeah,
got to be a little bit sceptical, but no, I think he's a good choice, and I congratulate the club on that appointment. I congratulate most of all Gary Rowett. He probably doesn't even realise yet what a fantastic job he's taken on. So, good luck, Gary.
I mean, I tell you, I was reading something in the paper yesterday about Gary Rowett. Now, it turns out that when he was an apprentice, right, where was it? It was Cambridge, isn't it?
Yes, it was Cambridge, yeah.
He was actually, at a very early age, he decided he wanted to do coaching. That was going to be his, you know, thing. And he went in and he was, and the guy that's, Gary Johnson was in charge at Cambridge at the time, and he went in and asked to do some training in the academy. And then a little while later on, right, and he wasn't even establishing any first team at that point. Mm. He also went to do it at Derby as well. right? So that tells me we've got somebody, and obviously he's a great studier of the game or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's fine by me. That's fine.
Absolutely. And he's made his professional debut against Millwall and all, scoring the winner down at the Old Den for Cambridge.
Did he really?
Yeah, and he said that he's never taken a throw-in so quick in his life. When and he was brought on by John Beck. He scored a goal, and then Millwall nearly scored, and John Beck blamed him for it, evidently, and he was taken off the pitch. So they subbed the sub. But yeah, right. he was saying that as well. So he's had experience of Millwall fans by the sounds of it. Hmm. So but I think he is going to be a good manager for Millwall.
Hmm. What I like as well about Gary Rowett is that he's quite personable, bit of a character as well. Yeah. We've seen his punditry that he's had on Sky Sports and various other channels as well. He seems like someone who can have a bit of a laugh, and I think sometimes that's important. And reading some of his quotes recently this week, you know, he said, you know, if I look bedraggled in the space of 2 months, if I've got no air left or something, good. Mm. Well, it means I'm enjoying myself.
We as a football club, Matt, what we need is a team out on the pitch. It might sound strange, but we can't cope with individuals. It's got to be a Millwall team. In other words, you bring all the players together. Mm. Gary Rowett, I think, is that type of manager. And that's why I think he suits us.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. And he's brought in his own number two in Callum Davidson. Of course, we know him from his time at Leicester and Blackburn, especially in the Premier League. But like you said, Jeff, he's kept Adam Barrett there. He's kept some of the staff there, which is a good thing. Because I think sometimes if you take, I don't know, David Moyes, for example, when he went into Manchester United, he ripped it all up. He got rid of all the staff, brought in his own men, and it was a disaster because those players were used to that. Those members of staff. I'm not saying that you have to keep them there forever, but I do think there should be a slower transition.
Mm. I think that Gary Rowett, while he was a pundit, I don't remember him slagging Millwall off, not even slightly. And when the news broke about Neil, he immediately said, oh, I know Neil, I speak to Neil, and he's done a very, very good job. So I think he was always interested in it. Yeah, look, I think we've said enough. He's a good appointment, and we're all hoping that that he proves to be a very, very good appointment. That will be wonderful.
Absolutely. Looking back at the games from the weekend that he was, of course, watching, fellas. First up, Brentford. We don't have to dwell on this one too much, but we have to be realistic. I mean, listen, getting more than one goal again in a game, huge. But to throw it away in the manner that it was thrown away was difficult to take, Ted.
Yeah, and unfortunately, we have got a little bit of history of doing it, Matt. Last year, we done it at Norwich, give two goals away in the last in injury time to lose the game 4-3. And we've given a hell of a lot of goals away in the last 10 minutes of matches. Now, that says to me, forget about the manager, the players have got to look at themselves, because there's something not right there. If they can't see a game out, whether it's their match management or whatever you call it, I don't know. But hopefully Gary Rowett can get that through them. Because if you look at the last two games, we've given 5 goals away. You can't carry on in this division giving goals like that away and expecting to climb up the table. Mm. You've got to stop conceding first. That's, to me, the first place that you start. We found a goal scorer in Tom Bradshaw, which I always believed once he was fit, or after the horrific injury that he had, I was hoping and praying he'd get back to what I believed he could be. And he is a potent goal scorer. He doesn't need that many chances to score. Give him one or two chances, you're literally guaranteed a goal with a guy. And he gets all sorts of goals. So we've got a goal scorer. We've just now got to make sure we get the things right at the other end, which we have done in the past, and stop giving goals away.
I mean, a success under Neil was built on a good defence. Yeah. We weren't the highest goal scorers, but we were good defensively. But at the moment, that seems to have gone. Mind you, we do get some late goals ourselves. It's not all one way. But the one we've all forgotten was Oxford. Yeah. That's a League One team we were tuning up against with 3 minutes to go in the League Cup. Mind you, the winners of that played West Ham, didn't they?
Yeah.
So, you know.
But it would have been an interesting spectacle.
But I tell you though, I was there last week when we were watching Brentford. I mean, and there's a football inside, they're superb. I mean, you see, we're giving away goals, and that's right. The reason we're giving away, because they got the ball. We can't keep the ball.
But Stan, their goals, their first goal, come from a throw-in.
But
I accept that. But the point I'm making is that when they get the ball, right, you know, it's very hard to get it off them because they're passing through you. They're good at keeping the ball, and this is what if you keep giving the ball away all the time, That's the and you're against teams like Brentford and the Leeds of this world, you're going to get punished.
We were 2-0 up and we were celebrating because we hadn't played all that well to be 2-0 up.
Sure, yeah.
They'd missed a penalty, we'd scored a penalty, but that first goal back was a horrendous goal to concede from a throw-on. And when you concede a goal away from home to make it 2-1, you know, the writing's on the wall, particularly for us at the moment. Let's move on from Brentford, can we? Because
let me just say
that wasn't any fun, was it?
No, but all three goals. The first one we spoke about was a throw-in. The second goal, although it was a fluke, the shot, they moved the ball from their own corner flag up to that area without anybody putting a tackle in. Yeah, but Stan, as a defender, or you got to stop that. You know, and then what happened with the third goal?
I disagree.
The third goal went across the goal, come back again, and somebody tapped it in. Yeah. It's terrible defending.
The interesting thing was the reaction of the Millwall fans. No one booed. No one complained.
Right.
We sat and stood there stunned at what we just seen. Do you agree?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I
people went out of that ground. No one was talking. Everyone was stunned by what happened.
Yeah.
Oh, I couldn't believe what I'd just seen. But look, I just wonder whether Adam Barrett would have been given the job for a while if it had finished after 83 minutes. But I don't think anyone doubted after 94 minutes that we were going to get a new manager in.
Yeah.
I think that was a certainty from then on. Cardiff. What do you want to say about Cardiff, lads?
Well, I mean, first and foremost, I think we've got to talk about a certain Tom Bradshaw, because he is the first Millwall player in 28 seasons now to score in 4 consecutive league games in the second tier. When we talk about players who come back from injury, Ted, I mean, huge for him.
I'm so pleased for the lad, Matt, because there's nothing worse in football, as we all know, than an injury like the one that Tom Bradshaw has had to fight his way back from. And I thought when we bought him, he was an ideal bloke to come into Millwall Football Club. I thought he was more than capable of being a goal scorer for us. And I was so disappointed for him. And it's no mean feat to come back all that way. And it takes a little bit of a while for you to get your confidence back, to be able to believe in yourself again. And I must admit, the guy's work rate now is matching his quality for me. I mean, somebody said to me the other night, who would you have, Lee Gregory or Tom Bradshaw? And they said that Lee Gregory worked harder than Tom Bradshaw, which is possibly true. But I'll tell you what, Tom Bradshaw ain't far behind him. Mm. But I know one thing, that if there was someone going through one-on-one with a goalkeeper out of them two, I'd have Tom Bradshaw every time. And now Lee Gregory are going to score on Saturday one-on-one with our keeper. But I'm so pleased for him, because there's nothing more satisfying in football than to see someone who comes back from a long-term injury be able to play again at the sort of level that he's capable of. So I'm over the moon for the guy.
Yeah, I mean, somebody was telling me, I didn't see it, but somebody told me that old Steve Morrison gave an interview, and I think he said last season, before the injury, Morrison said he was the best finisher in the club, and he was on the bench every week, right? As before he got his injury, right? And you think, well, what's all that about, right? But where I would agree with what Ted's saying, and I think where he's got an advantage over Gregory, I think he's got a lot more pace about him than Gregory has. I mean, Gregory was no slouch, but what I'm saying is I think Bradshaw is a little bit more pacier, and he's a good player, and he's proven it. He's proven it, right?
It's actually a goal every 120 minutes this season, which is the third best in the Championship. We are going to move on, gents, just quickly, before we do move on. He's about to equal a record. If he does score this weekend against Stoke, he equals a record of successive games in scoring, like I said, in the second tier.
Did you say when he scores?
Yeah, when he scores. When he scores, sorry, gents.
Who was the previous
91-92 season. Who do you reckon it was?
91-92?
What, Millwall player?
Yep. For the club.
Oh, God. Got me there. 91-92.
John McGinley.
No. Ted?
No. Sheringham?
No.
No.
John Goodman?
Alex Ray, there we go. Didn't realise he was scoring that many successive games. This is the Millwall Fan Show. Just before we move on as well, it is an absolute onslaught at St Mary's. Leicester are leading Southampton away from home 7-0. An Iosi Perez hat-trick for the Foxes in this clash. Only 59 minutes gone. So half an hour left in that game. This could well end up a record Premier League victory. Millwall Fan Show on Love Sport.
We've all got one, and we're not afraid to put it on display. Our opinions, that is. Share yours now at Love Sport Radio on Twitter or call us 0208 70 20 558. Love Sport Radio, your fan station.
This is indeed Love Sport. It is the Millwall Fan Show. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the guys from No Lou Talking, Stan Godwin, Tim Robinson and Jeff Burnage. I'll tell you what, the heat has just risen in the studio because we've got George Jacks on the line, gents. Stan, I'm going to come to you in a moment or two because George Jacks, from Stepney, of course, in East London, started his career at QPR in 1964. In 1965, a year later, he moved across London to the Den. And only after one appearance, of course, with QPR, he became a popular midfielder for the Lions over the next 7 years, scoring five goals in just over 150 appearances. In 1972, he moved on to Gillingham, where he recorded his most appearances before playing in non-league football with both Northfleet and Gravesend and Barking. He's often seen in and around the Den and is admired by many, including a certain Mr. Godwin next to me, who remembered his days at the old Den. George, it's great to have you on. I'm just going to go straight to Stan, who is chuffed to bits.
Hello, okay, George. Mate. How are you, mate? All right?
Yeah, I'm fine, thank you.
Oh, good. I tell you what, when I heard that you was going to be on this show tonight, I thought to myself, I thought I've got to be on it because, and unfortunately, somebody drops out, so I was managed to get on. Let me ask you this, George. Do you remember, for me, this is, that the game that turned your, that actually turned your career around at Millwall?
You'd have to remind me, to be honest.
Well, I'll give you the date, mate. It was on the 16th of October, 1967, and it was a midweek game.
Right. Was it at...
And it was at home.
Oh, go on, Stan, tell him, for goodness sake.
Right. Put me out of my misery.
Right, that was the game, George, right? Now, for some people are going to listen to...
Northampton Town.
That's it.
Well done.
That's it.
There we go.
The second, and I tell you what, it was a second-round replay of the League Cup.
Yeah, that's right.
Right, and what happened was Ken Jones was normally the number four, and he was injured that night, and George came in, and I think it was the first time he played in the middle of midfield.
Yes, it was.
Right, he came in that night. Right, he scored two goals. We won 5-1, and after that, he never looked back. Never ever looked back. And I said,
absolutely.
Can you remember your first league goal that season?
The first league goal, it may have been against Scunthorpe.
No, Palace, mate.
Palace.
And I tell you what, it was in November, 2-2 draw. And I tell you, a bloke who made his debut for Millwall that day was Brian Conlon, centre forward,
right,
and scored.
Yeah, Brian.
And you scored the first goal, mate.
Yes, that's right.
George, it's Jeff Burnage here. Good evening.
Hello,
George.
Jeff.
Nice to speak to you, mate. Very nice.
Yeah, thank you.
I got a question for you. Billy Gray signed you. Is that right?
That's correct.
Can you tell us about that? Because he's a manager that a lot of Millwall fans look back on very kindly. Did you have a good opinion of him?
Absolutely. Because Billy Gray would never expect you to do anything that he couldn't do. And it was amazing, really. I went there in 65 and he showed us certain skills that he had. And if you couldn't live up to that, then he berated you. You know, he said, if I can do it, you can do it. And I thought he was a good tactician as well, Billy.
He did actually play, didn't he, as well for us? He was player manager to start with. George, I've got another question. You were playing in the famous 59 game, league game at home, unbeaten run, weren't you?
Yeah.
That 2.5 years.
Right.
The nearest we came to losing was against Scunthorpe at home.
That's right.
And you scored the equaliser. And I would like you to tell the audience whether it was left foot, right foot or header.
It was in my middle leg.
Exactly.
There we go.
See, I have got a twisted sort of memory, haven't I? Right?
Yeah.
So how do they put that in the stats, I wonder?
Can I just add to that last game that it was against Plymouth that we lost our unbeaten home record? I wasn't playing that day.
There you go, George.
I was watching from the stands.
Yeah. Well, one sub, wasn't it, in those days, George?
Yes, it was, yeah.
Do you know what, George? It's funny because often when you speak to a lot of ex-footballers on these shows and you regale their career to them, like Stan has just done to yourself and Jeff has done as well, often they like, oh, do you know what? I can't really remember that. I love the fact that you remember you weren't playing in the game where the record was broken. Brilliant.
But I tell you what, though, I mean, at that time, I mentioned the game against Crystal Palace. There was 30,000 in that ground that day, and it was unsegregated. Yeah. I mean, you couldn't imagine it, though, did you? Unsegregated.
No. Incredible. Yeah.
Hello, George, it's Ted here.
Hello, Ted.
I've got to tell you, George, at the beginning of this interview, I didn't know who George Jacks was. I thought he was in the ear with me. Old Stan was giving all your information out there, mate. I'm brilliant remembering that stat that you wasn't playing in the game that we lost. That's fantastic. But you was an anchor in the middle of the field there, George.
Yeah.
And you had a few decent players around you, didn't you?
I did, yes.
You played with dear old Kitch and Alan Dawney and whatever.
Yeah, Keith Weller, Derek Posse.
Must have been a fantastic feeling to be in a team like that.
It was. It was a real pleasure to play, and I can tell you that. When I met Derek at the last home game, Queen's Park Rangers game.
Yeah.
We had a good old chat up in the stands there, and after 5 minutes, 10 minutes watching that game, we were saying to one another, you know, the 10 of QPR is running the show. They need to put someone on him.
You should have gone down there and got on him, George, because you was good at that.
George, I think you have another page in history. Were you not Millwall's first ever substitute?
Yes, I was.
Wow.
You see, Stan, you're not the only one that's got a memory.
No, I never said I was.
It's amazing what I can remember from 1967, and I can't remember what I had for lunch as today, isn't it? That goes with the age.
Do you know what, George, actually? I'd love to ask you on that. I believe Keith Peacock was the first ever substitute used. Yeah. But when that was all happening, George, obviously there are developments in football as we know now, of course, it went from 2 points to 3 points, et cetera, et cetera. But when those changes happened and substitutes came in and you were the first substitute, was it anything that players went, oh, crikey, this is a change, or did you just get on with it?
Just got on with it.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that was the change. It was just one substitute, and it's terrible if the substitute's gone on, then you get an injured player and you're down to 10 men, things like that. Especially on the pitches we played on years ago.
George, it's lovely seeing you at the Den. I did see you briefly at that QPR game, but Derek, everyone wanted to talk to Derek, didn't they?
Yeah,
so
that's
I kept my distance. But I do know you're coming to the game tomorrow.
I am, yes.
And you're bringing your grandchildren, who I did read, they don't actually believe you were a player. Is that any truth in that?
Yeah. Yes, I have to sit down and, you know, I've showed them pictures now. They realise I do, you know, did play for Millwall and Queen's Park Rangers and that. So they've taken it all in now, and I've got a granddaughter who's a very good player.
Is she? How old is she?
She's only 9.
Yeah. Is she playing for a team?
She's playing for a boys' side, and she is a year younger than them, all of them.
And then whereabouts do you live these days?
I live in, Maidstone area?
Yeah.
I live down that way.
You're a Stepney boy, though, aren't you?
Yes.
Yeah,
right. East London
Look,
area.
If you're at the Blue Bus tomorrow, I shall come over and I'll tell everyone within earshot that you were the best midfield player Millwall had in the 60s, and I'll keep quiet about Keith Weller.
what you don't realise, George, is your tickets for your grandchildren are right next to the stand, so they will make sure that they will know that you was a player by the time they get out of the ground tomorrow.
George, it's been great having you on. Just a very quick couple more, I guess. Be great to know what you make of the Lions so far this season. And also, you obviously played in that era in the 60s and 70s. Do you still keep in touch with some of the boys?
My best friend was Kitch. And sadly, it passed away. But Alan Dawney, I see, not regular, but every now and again. But apart from that, no, I don't see anybody. I'd love to have done, you know, kept in touch. But Derek's away in New Zealand.
No, Vancouver he is.
Yeah, Vancouver. And I just find that, once I'd left the Den, I did see a few players afterwards, but very few and far between now. It's a shame, really, because, you know, you do like to see old faces. Well, I do, anyway.
Yeah, well, you can always see Stans tomorrow, you know. <that's fine. laughs> and a quick assessment of the boys this season, George.
Briefly, I've watched them about 3 times this season, and I just feel that we lack something, again, in my, when I played, midfield area. I don't think that when the ball goes up front, anybody, you know, from what I've seen, they're not making runs off the ball, which, you know, it'll take the pressure off the defence. Give them something to think about not less worried about other teams.
That's it, yeah.
No, no, I agree.
Nice. George, it's been nothing but a pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Well, thanks for having us.
See you tomorrow, George.
See you, George.
Yeah, see you tomorrow, and wish you all a good and healthy time, okay, anyway.
Lovely.
Well, cheers, George.
Oh, and you, mate.
Okay.
That was George Jacks. How are you doing with that, Stan? You all right, mate? Yeah,
brilliant, good. Brilliant. I tell you, brilliant. He was some player.
He was. He was probably, if you remember at the time, coming into the game, people started to sort of man mark players. Mm-hmm. And George, if we was playing someone, I remember him once doing it with Rodney Marsh at QPR.
Yeah.
They put George Jacks on it, and I'll tell you what, he was the best I ever see at doing that sort of job or role in a football team. Oh. Whoever George Jacks went against, they never got the better of him.
No, that's right.
He always got the better of him.
I mean, that's right. I mean, you talk about players today. I mean, if he was playing today, what would he be worth? Mm. I mean, he was no Wally. I mean, I'm telling you, he was a good, good player.
Yeah.
And he's forever remembered on your Twitter page, did you say?
Yeah, I've got, you look at my Twitter feed, I've got his picture there. And as I say, when I went to that game, right, and when they come over, about, oh, Jax is in the team, but after that game, he never, ever looked back.
Mm.
And from that moment on, they loved him.
Awesome. He was a 7 or 8 out of 10 player every game.
Every game.
Yeah.
First name on a team sheet, one of the first names.
And just to finish, chaps, so he signed in 1965, and you lot remember seeing him. And what are you, fellas? Like, what are we looking at?
Me, I'm 66.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Oh, crikey.
I was looking at me praying, but I was there. I see him, you know.
This is the Millwall Fan Show on Love Sport.
We've all got one, and we're not afraid to put it on display. Our opinions, that is. Share yours now at Love Sport Radio on Twitter or call us 0208 70 20 558. Love Sport Radio, your fan station.
It's the Millwall Fan Show on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the guys from Nolu Talking, Stan, Ted and Jeff. We're going to move on to the fan in the dugout shortly. But first, we heard from Bethany Warren last week telling us about the No One Likes Us Talking podcast question for October. Responses were made as far as afield as New Zealand. Crikey. From all over the globe. We transcend.
I'm not talking about New Zealand today.
Carry on. All right, we'll move on. This month's winner was drawn out of the hat from a host of correct answers that named Williams, O'Brien and Pierce as the three Millwall players within the current squad to have been capped at full international level by the Republic of Ireland. No One Likes Us Talking memorabilia is on its way to this month's winner, Vic Banwangan from Manado, Indonesia. Crikey, O'Reilly, oh, congratulations, Vic. Impressive stuff. Millwall fans across the globe.
Yep. I'm trying to work out how he knew that.
There we go. Well, I'll tell you what. We will move on to the fan in the dugout now, or potentially the fans in the dugout. I believe we've got Paul and Christine McSloy. Is Christine on with you, Paul?
No, Christine's... she's sitting here, but she's not... confident enough to come on the radio, so she's asked me to fire the answers.
You thought you were going to say she's seen sense, Paul.
Well, she's still just trying to get over the Indonesian. You know, she's saying big. So we're a global brand now. You know, so,
I tell you what, absolutely. All that husky chocolate. Right.
I wonder if he goes home via South Bermondsey. Do you think he does?
Yeah.
Paul, I guess we'll ask you straight off the bat. Gary Wowett, new man in charge. Are you happy?
Do you know what? I think for those who are available, yeah. You know, I've done a little bit of reading up on him, and I know he's got a bit of a defensive style, but I think he's got enough technical knowledge to change and adapt to during games, which maybe Neil never had. Just seeing some of the stuff he did at Burton and Derby and Birmingham. I know he blew up a bit at Stoke, but everybody else is blowing up at Stoke, so obviously there's a deeper problems there. And I'm quite happy with that. You know, I weren't too interested in any others that were muted, Roy Keane, Steve Morris and Gareth Ainsworth, but unfortunately I'm not going to the game tomorrow. I'm away at the moment, but I'm looking forward to a good game, you know, especially against his old club. Very good, in my opinion.
The other thing about him, Paul, is I think he's a manager that feels like he's got a little something to prove, if you know what I mean. And I always like that. I mean, it sounds strange, but I prefer to get someone to come to us who's probably not had the best of times, rather than someone that's been flying on the crest of a wave, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, definitely. I think you're right there. I think he's definitely got unfinished business within the football environment, and the way he was treated at Birmingham. And then I know at Stoke he had big investment and it just never worked for him. But you can see what's happening with Nathan Jones. Something's going on behind the scene there. I read a lot of podcasts from Stoke supporters, and they're saying it's, you know, Rout, well, you know, didn't have enough time, but there's so many egos in that Stoke side, and he just couldn't get them. So hopefully, like, he's come to Millwall. I don't think there's any egos at Millwall, and I think we've got a talented group of players. I just hope he has a plan. He has a plan A, but I really hope his plan B comes into play, because that's what we need to do, is change during games. You know, Neil would do it when we was losing games. Then we went after the games. But hopefully, Raya he's got a good point to prove. And, you know, he's already talking about Premiership mentality, which sounds good. And he doesn't go off the handle. He's like, he's quite positive in some of the stuff he's saying there. You know, he's not talking a load of stuff. Just sort of a good return. So hopefully, it'll be good. It'll be good for us.
We also have to ask you the same question that we ask everybody, Paul. If you could pick three players to start in the next match, who would they be?
Easy. Bart, I think, you know, he's made a couple of saves, but I've got some of the saves he's made, I think he's good. Jed Wallace and Bradshaw, as long as they're playing in a 4-4-1-1 with Wallace behind Bradshaw, Wallace with the freedom, them three are the definite starters for me.
He's made the most saves in the Championship this season, actually, Bielkowski. 45 saves, the most, more than any other keeper.
And you know what? And the disappointing thing with that is, you know, we always set up as a defensive team, let everybody have the possession, and that's what happens. You know, you let another team have the possession, you ain't got the ball, you're not going to score. You know, we've got the lowest possession in the Championship. And the only one game we've had the better possession was against Cardiff. And Cardiff have got the second lowest possession in the Championship, and I think they're a poor side. And so hopefully now that Rao have changed that, he can see that. You know, that's just basics. You know, don't let them have the ball. You know, and when you let them have the ball for 70% of the time, you're going to get punished. You know, and so, you know, Bart's really impressed me, especially for a man with no knees.
Well, we were saying earlier, Paul, that certainly defensive-wise, we've just got to tighten up, haven't we? And it's been a little bit strange because we have been quite good defensively at times, but just silly goals we've been giving away of late.
Yeah, I don't know whether it's you know, we had a bit of a problem last year. Well, I was on the show in August, and you know, I said that you know, Harris has got the players he wanted. I thought he had 10 to 15 games to prove himself with that. The spine of the team is what he had it, but it's the mentality. You know, like, it seemed like the last 10 minutes of games that they sort of failed away last season, and then I've just seen it creeping in, like Brentford. I know that when it was 2-0 up, I thought it was a false result because they battered us, absolutely battered us. You know, Mr. Penalty hit the post at the bar. Bart, I think, made 3 or 4 absolutely outstanding saves in the first half, and we went 1-0 in, but then we just fell apart in the last 10 minutes. And even against Cardiff there, I just see some lack of, they can't be tired. They can't be tired. We're only just getting into the season, but there just seems to be a lack of concentration. I actually honestly believe it's the tactics. You know, there's decent quality players, and they're running after the player with the ball. We're not running with the ball and let the player chase them.
I mean, I've got to say, Paul, when we was playing Cardiff, when we went 2-1 down, I mean, I did fear for that. You know, I thought, well, we're going to be in trouble here. And then all of a sudden, it all changed. But, you know, I think that what might have helped us out in the end was when he took Matt Smith off and he then put Bavardson on. Because to me, out of all the players we've got up front at the moment, they would be the ideal, because you've got pace, you know, and all that sort of thing. And if I don't dislike Matt Smith, but you know, if we play Matt Smith, you know exactly what's going to happen. And if I know it, their centre-half knows it, and they know exactly what way you're going to play.
Yeah. A friend of mine's a big QPR fan, and he said Matt Smith does not last. He does not last, and I think that's proven. Like, I thought at Cardiff, I thought it was one of our poorest games at Cardiff. Mm. As you said, there was blips there where we had some good possession and we played well. We had Bradshaw. I thought it was just like Basher and Wallace just really impressed me at the moment, but them two can't carry the team. But Matt Smith, I don't think he won a header all night. He looked like he was treading in mud. He just couldn't get off the floor. Plus, I thought Barrett got the tactics wrong. We're playing against the biggest side in the division, and they're lumping balls up to him, and they had their two centre halves just crowding around him, you know, tugging a little bit at him, and he didn't have a chance. You know, so I thought the tactics were a little bit wrong for that. I've definitely gone the 4-1-1. You know, they've got three. Their average height of their players must be 6'1". You know, definitely got no pace, but we got pace in the team, and I think he got his tactics slightly wrong there. And it was just lumping balls back and forward, wasn't it? It was just one of the most boring games.
Yeah, I mean, that's right. I mean, absolutely.
Paul, it's Jeff Burnage here, mate.
Hi, Jeff.
So whereabouts do you watch the games from when you're at home games, Paul? What part of the stadium?
I sit in the south lower, block 40, where I used to stand in the old cold glove.
Lovely.
So I still sit with all my old pals. You know,
it's amazing how that happened when we moved ground. People went to the area that was the equivalent part of the ground to where they were before. I don't think it's survived completely since then. But you were saying you'd like to see us set up with 4-4-1-1. Obviously, yeah. Bradshaw's won. Who would you personally partner with Tom Bradshaw?
I would have my team, like if we saw my team for Saturday would be Bart in goal, would be Romeo, Hutchinson, Cooper, and Ferguson left back. I'd have Mahoney, I'd have Thompson, Bulumbi, I'd have Wallace and Bradshaw. I'd have Wallace directly behind Bradshaw. You know, Thompson would be in the midfield. I can't remember who I'd put right midfield, but definitely put Wallace behind Bradshaw and let them two just run at them. Now, I don't see the big man up front. It's so predictable now. You know, you get the diagonal ball from Cooper. I don't see it against Cardiff. They just charged after him. He went diagonal, tried to do the diagonal ball, and people were just finding us out. We're too predictable. So when you put Wallace and Bradshaw, and then Thompson coming from that midfield as well, you know, Wallace, I think you remember the first season we won the Championship. And I remember the first game we played against Nottingham Forest, where I think we had 22 shots a goal. And that was all credit from Wallace. Wallace would pop up right back, left back, centre midfield. He would just dart about wherever he needed to go. They couldn't control it. And I could see that, you know, if we give him that little bit of freedom, you know, he generalised and said, get players running back. No, get them running back. If they're running back, they're not running towards our goal. That's the way I would do it.
Absolutely. Definitely. Paul, it's been great having you on, boss. Thank you very much for coming on tonight.
All right, mate. No problem.
Cheers, Paul.
That was our fan in the dugout, Paul McSloy. We're going to move on to the Millwall Legend of the Week, but we're going to do that after this on the Millwall Fan Show. I love sport.
For the fans, by the fans, Love Sport Radio.
This is the Millwall Fan Show on Love Sport. Myself, Matt Beadle, here with the guys from No Lou Talking. Right, we are going to look ahead to the game with Stoke City next. But first, Millwall Lionesses were involved in an 11-goal game against Watford under-18s at Rotherhithe in a cup tie which ended 10-1 to the Lionesses. Lionesses boss Colin Reid described the game as a great team performance with 5 goals in each half. This Sunday, the Lionesses are back in league action when they face Lawford Ladies again at Rotherhithe with a 2 p.m. kickoff. And don't forget, of course, all fans attending those games this season will have free entrance. So please come along to watch a team that is certainly firing on all cylinders, Jeff.
Yeah, I've been going to the games, and as everyone knows, we have been dropped 4 levels. It's very important for everyone to know that these girls, a lot of them are Millwall fans, a lot of them really wanted to come and play for the club at this lower level. It's going well, but we need to get promoted for sure to go up a division in one go. A lot of home games coming up, 2 o'clock Sunday afternoon at St Paul's in Rotherhithe.
Lovely stuff. We're going to move on to the Legend of the Week now. This was sent in by Ben Butler of Mepham. A certain goalkeeper, Brian Horn. What do we think, Stan? Legend of the Week. You're right there, mate. You just chilling out?
Yeah,
a little break. Nice.
spoken to his legend, and that was George.
Yeah, he's done now. He's tapped out. he can't get any higher now. Legend of the Week, yeah. Stan. Sent in by Ben Butler.
Yeah.
Brian Horn.
Yeah, well, yeah, I can understand that. because he played in the team, didn't he? The team that came up,
51 games in successive seasons.
Yeah,
during
I can understand that. The thing about it, when you look at him, I mean, in terms of goalkeepers, in height wise, he was little. I mean, today
he was little and portly.
I've seen him, and he was a good goalkeeper, and. Because I was surprised, because I thought you were going to say somebody else when you said Brian, but I thought when you heard you say Brian, I thought you were going to talk about Brian King. That's who I thought you were going to talk about.
I think we've done him, haven't we?
Well, I think we have,
I've got no argument for that. I can fully understand why somebody would make that judgment.
I loved him, Matt. I loved Brian Horn.
Did you?
5'10", 5'10½". He was only portly after he finished playing. It wasn't portly.
I wasn't having a dig. I was just saying, but no, he was slightly. I mean, a lot of goalkeepers at that time.
That was very short for a goalkeeper. Mm. But I'll tell you two things. One is he played those two or three seasons virtually unchanged in what was the most successful Millwall team ever. So that is worth something. But he was the bravest goalkeeper we've ever had. Mm. I think being 5'10", 5'10½", he had to be something special because he wasn't going to be the tallest or anything. He had a massive kick on him, but bravery. He put his face in people's boots over and over again. And I mean, everyone remembers him for one particular penalty save, Ted. Do you know that one?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Well,
Which one was that, Ted? You say
brave, Jeff, but a lot of people might say stupid. But yeah. I mean, as I know, Brian.
Well, were you at Bournemouth that night?
At Bournemouth that night, yeah, for the penalty save. As I know his dad very well.
Yeah.
And I know Brian. So I believe Brian was a legend in the goal, and he was a legend in the calf. He could eat people under the table. He could save anything that was thrown at him. So he'll appreciate that I've said that for him, but. Of course he's a legend because of the team, the whole team legend.
He's involved in organising our pre-season tours, by the way.
Yes.
So he's got his connection with the club. Legend for me.
Lovely. Legend, Stan?
Yeah, absolutely.
Legend. Lovely stuff. Right, Brian Horn, legend. Thank you for sending that in, Ben Butler. We're going to move on to the game with Stoke now, of course. Millwall's new manager facing Stoke's old manager. We've got Martin Spinks on the line from the Stoke Sentinel. Martin, thank you for coming on. What an intriguing clash we've got. It always happens in football, doesn't it, that this just so happens that a guy takes charge of a club and there we go, wallop. His first game in charge is against his old club.
It was a dead cert, wasn't it? It was obviously written in the stars, and it certainly spiced it up from our end. I don't know about the Millwall end, but Gary only left us in January, so there's probably still a few raw feelings on his part, and certainly amongst some of the supporters too.
Was he given a fair crack, in your opinion? 8 months, you know, I'm sure he had a brief when he took over. We were talking about it earlier. In terms of his percentage of winning games, that wasn't particularly high. However, he did win more than he lost. And when you look at that on paper, you think that maybe it was a bit harsh to let him go.
Well, certainly compared to where the club is now, you'd look back and think, well, what on earth was Stoke thinking? But of course, expectations are so much higher then. They'd only just come down from the Premier League. He'd had a lot of money to spend in the summer of 2018, which he himself acknowledged, brought in 7-8 players, and they just didn't perform well enough. But they did have a good period in the late autumn, early winter, where he was getting them back on track. But he never really won over the fans. I remember them being booed off when they beat Millwall, actually, just before Christmas at Stoke. And they'd won the game, but hadn't played particularly well. And that was just a measure of the expectation. He wasn't only expected to win games, but his team play well. And then he hit a bad Christmas and New Year, lost 3 out of 4, and he was gone.
You sure that wasn't Millwall fans booing? Michael, are you sure that wasn't Millwall fans booing at that game? We do that quite a bit when we lose.
Before the final whistle, actually. It was a long trip home. But no, definitely the Stoke fans are making the most noise. But they never really warmed to him either, nor warmed to many of his signings. In fact, the best signing from that summer was a player who came in before he was appointed, Peter Atibo, who, if he's fit, will be playing tomorrow. He picked up an injury at Sheffield Wednesday on Tuesday. He's a key player for Stoke. But many of Gary's signings just didn't take off quickly enough, I'm afraid.
Who were they? Who were his signings?
James McLean, Tom Ince, Benny Kofobi, were the sort of more prominent players. Ryan Woods as well from Brentford. Sam Clucas came in, wasn't fit for a while. He took time to settle. He'll be playing tomorrow.
And another one, one of the few that will be playing as well, is Adam Federici, who's taken over in goal from Jack Butland. He's had a really wretched time to mirror Stoke's wretched season so far, and Federici's played the last four games.
Martin, can I quickly ask you about that? We haven't got a whole lot of time left, but that goalkeeper situation, we know the deal with Jack Butland, and of course he's struggling for form at the moment, but the fact that Adam Davies came in from Barnsley, you know, he was arguably the goalkeeper of League One last season. He decided to move to Stoke, but Federici has trumped him, and Adam Davies has found himself now as a number three goalkeeper. Are you surprised that he hasn't been given a shot ahead of Federici?
I feel sorry for him, because he was obviously sold the story that he'll be our number one. We've got an experienced number two in Adam Federici. Jack Butland's still at the club, but we're trying to sell him, and we expect to sell him. The number one spot is yours for the taking. Butland didn't go. Obviously, Davies hasn't done enough behind the scenes in training to have moved up the pecking order. So when Jack had his problems, it was Federici who got the gig. And I'm afraid Adam Davies, all we've seen of him, is on the bench in League Cup games.
Martin, this is Stan here. I'm just interested in a couple of points. One, I don't know whether you're aware of this, but tomorrow at Millwall's Day is the initial thing of the Poppy Day. And the reason I mention that is because you've got a certain player in your team who, you know, won't wear a pop in his shirt. Now, that ain't going to go down too well with our people to start off with, and it doesn't go down too well with a lot of people. But all I'm hoping is, I mean, assuming the guy is playing, right, when they start doing the bit that they do, the bugle and the last post, and if he's standing there with a football playing keep me up there, I mean, they're going to kill him. I mean, I hope he behaves himself tomorrow for his own benefit. The other thing is, what do you make of Lee Gregory?
Well, the competition isn't hot, but he's arguably been Stoke's best player this season. That's not to say he's been brilliant. He's been solid. He's got a couple of goals. But he's one of the few players who's endeared himself to the fans because he works so hard. I'm sure I'm not telling you anything you don't know. He's a real team player. He'll work the channels. He'll come short. He'll go over the top. The criticism has been that he's had chances. He hasn't stuck away. He should really have, all things being even, he should have five or six goals to his name instead of two. But that aside, his general play, certainly compared to other players, has been pretty good. They've got four strikers to pick from, and he's the only one who's really established himself as a regular this season. So a big thumbs up from us to Lee Gregory.
Martin, it has been great having you on the show. Thank you very much for joining us this evening.
Pleasure. See you tomorrow.
That was Martin Spinks from the Stoke Sentinel. Gents, before you go, quick predictions. Ted, I'm going to start with you.
I just got this feeling Lee Gregory's going to score, so I'll go 2-1.
2-1. Nice.
Yep. Jeff, that's your two.
I was going to say, you want him 2-1 to Millwall, right?
2-1 to Millwall, yeah. The old Jeff? Course. Yeah.
Well, my twin grandchildren are coming, aged 13 weeks, so I'm hoping for a win. I'm going to go 2-0.
Lovely story. And Stan?
Yeah, I'll go for a Millwall win tomorrow. Yeah. Lee Gregory may or may not score, but, providing we win, I don't personally care whether he scores or not. I mean, as long as we win the game.
I hope they get a penalty. I hope he gets a penalty and he misses, because he's done enough down here.
Lovely stuff. Millwall Fan Show on Love Sport. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.